Hard. All right. Cool. Well, welcome in. This calls how to be unfuckwithable as a CMOX. And the idea came because I feel like I have gone through a really big awakening when it comes to working with clients. And I've done my best to put myself in a position where it sounds kind of funny, but I'm right. And I know what I want and I know what I'm going after and I'm going to get it. And if it doesn't work out here, I'm going to go to the next place and get it. And that comes across as a sense of confidence that has helped me significantly with clients. But that confidence, like I didn't know kind of how it came about. So I worked with Raf because he is a master of this stuff. And we extracted four major steps to becoming unfuckwithable. And I'll walk you through the steps and you'll have a worksheet here in a second. But I think this is the big thing, which is we're like in the middle of this AI revolution. Who here's like looking at Mythos? We know that that's the next model that's coming out from OpenAI, and like maybe it's going to be a really big deal. We're also
Anthropic.
seeing, sorry, thank you, Anthropic. We're also seeing Opus 4.6. I just saw a benchmark test that was done over the weekend. It was done yesterday on the 12th, and it said that Opus from launch, Opus 4.6 at launch in February versus where it is now, it has dropped like significantly in its power. Like they're making it weaker. It's like a weird place for us to be using these tools that are great that are like getting less great, and we kind of can't track that stuff. I think companies are moving faster than they've ever moved before. I live in Philadelphia, and my wife and I toured a mansion. It was a middle class home where the family had two children and they had three servants that lived in the house. Right? This is just a middle class home. This wasn't a fancy place. And the guy's office was a desk where he just wrote letters. Like, how slow was his business? He would have to get on his horse and go downtown to mail a letter at Benjamin Franklin's post office. Like, life was slow then. He'd write two letters a day. How many emails do we send a day? What are we vibe coding every day? You know, how many campaigns are we launching? So we're moving faster than ever before. And it feels like technology is changing rapidly. I mean, the fundamentals are still there, but like we're still rapidly moving. And I think it's hard to find confidence when you're doing stuff that's never been done before. I think the economy is weird right now. I mean, all the stuff that's happening with Iran, all the knock-on effects for what that's going to mean for energy, what that's going to mean for manufacturing, what it's going to mean for buying power, what it's going to mean for the midterm elections. It's just like a big shakeup that feels like it is happening. And I think the environment that we're in is different. So we have to be steady somehow, despite everything moving faster and more unpredictably than ever before. I mean, I look back at I graduated college in 2008, and it was the housing crisis, and that felt crazy. Right now, I think we could all just like manage a housing crisis, right? It's like, oh, that's easy. We managed the housing crisis, then we managed a global pandemic, and now we're on to, AI and everything that's happening. So the only thing that you can reliably influence in all of this stuff is you, right? We can do stuff with our clients and we can put ourselves in positions, but ultimately we can only reliably influence ourselves and change the way that we operate. So the question that we're setting out to kind of answer here is how can you be steady and achieve your long-term goals that you set out for yourself without self-sabotaging? That's the whole goal. All right. And just as I say that, my Google just did its sign out. I think I'm okay. All right. So four steps to being unfuckwithable. First step, you got to know what you want. So we're going to talk about that. You got to know what you want. This is like globalize this. This is the big picture. What do I want? I can't be unfuckwithable if I don't know what I want and I just kind of choose whatever's in front of me at any given moment. So know what you want. And then you got to stand on solid ground. And I'll show you how to do that as a CMO. And then you have to approach conflict skillfully. A lot of what we're going to talk about today is conflict and your relationship to conflict. And then the last thing is playing the long game. Because if you know what you want, you got to play the long game to get there. And you got to deal with the stuff that happens in the middle of it. But it's knowing what you want and playing the long game. That's what we're after. So there's a quote that I heard a couple of years ago. I heard it on the Farnham Street podcast, The Knowledge Project. And it's just stuck with me. It's like one of my favorite quotes. Rudyard Kipling says, "If you don't get what you want, it's a sign either that you didn't seriously want it or that you tried to bargain over the price. And a lot of us, and I would add here, like, you didn't seriously want it, or you didn't even know what you wanted. Some people just like play the game of business. They don't know what they want. They don't know when to stop. They don't know when they're on the right path. So they can't ever pay the fee to get what it's worth. And that fee is typically like effort, failing, understanding like how you react to different situations and adding elements to support you so that you don't self-sabotage, things like that. So the first question that I want to ask you, and I'm going to give you the worksheet here in just a second, is what do I want? What do you want? And I want you just to take a moment and think about this. What do you want? Hardest question. How do you even answer that question? Where do you even begin? So we'll just answer that in the realm of business and kind of career and like lifestyle. I want you to think, is there a feeling that you want to feel generally when you work with clients? Is that something you want? Is it a financial target you're trying to achieve? A certain amount a year or a certain amount over time? Are you trying to fill an investment account? Are you thinking about like a 4% safe withdrawal rate so that you can fire, so that you're financially independent and you can retire early? Maybe you have a target for that. That's usually like 25 times your annual burn. Do you have an hours per week target? How many hours a week you want to work? Or maybe you have a milestone. Is Ashley on here? Yeah, Ashley. I was thinking about you. Like, do you have like a outcome that you want? Like, how many babies you want to help get born, or how many, like, anything like that?
I need to get there. I think I just want that feeling of I made a difference to have that, make that, I guess, attract that family to help that baby be born.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I think you're on the right path. I think that in and of itself is not photographable and not clear. So I want you guys, we're on page two here on these bullets. Write three to five bullets based on what you want. That's where I want you to focus right now. Three to five bullets on what you want. And you have to describe this and define it. I can give you things that I want, but what do you want? And a big idea here again is photographable. How do we photograph that you've achieved it? Did you achieve what you wanted because you did it once? Because you touched it? So some of you're like, man, if I could make 50 grand a month, that would be it. Cool. What if you made that in 1 month and you made zero the rest of the year? Did you still make it? What do you want? I really want you to answer this. This is hard. What do you want? If someone has something that's clear to them, just like come off mute and share what they want, what you want.
I have one that I'm not sure how to con or word it in a nice, succinct way, but basically to feel like, or to stop feeling like I'm having to chase something. You know what I mean? Like to consistency, I guess would be what it is, just consistency in what I'm doing.
Okay,
I don't
consistency.
know. Does
Yeah.
that make sense?
To me, chasing is like it comes with a feeling of like attention, like
Yeah,
there's
like not
conflict,
enough.
like I'm always
Yeah.
behind, like something
Yeah.
like that. So like steady confidence,
Ease, yeah.
ease. Yeah. And well, ease is a funny one because I don't want it to be easy.
No, I think
I
it's
want it
more
to be
just
hard, actually.
feeling confidence, maybe is that it? Is it? Yeah, just being confident in what I'm doing and how I'm getting and keeping clients.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like the keeping part. That's good. Not just getting clients. This is a great list. This comes from Dr. Marshall Rosenberg in the Center for Nonviolent Communication. So he's got his feelings here. Some good feelings. These are feelings when your needs are satisfied, and then there's also the opposite. So maybe something comes up here. Maybe that's helpful. This is really important that it's clear for you. Because, man, if you were like, I just want to feel stressed and behind, I want to feel dumb, I want to feel ineffective, and I want to feel like I'm going to lose my house at any moment, it's like I could make that future for you. I could help, I could introduce you to people, and make that all come true. But maybe you want something else.
Casey, I was just going to add a couple of words come for me is like synergy and alignment, which I think is, like when we talk about it being easy, it's not necessarily that it's easy, it's just that there's a synergy that we're, having a momentum working towards, in alignment. Like those are, that's where I'm at anyway.
Teamwork?
Teamwork.
Yeah.
For me
Cool.
anyway, teamwork is important. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
AC, I'll tell you what I'm trying to build is a family legacy.
Sorry, what's up, Brandon Jones?
What's up, buddy? How
What's
are
up,
you?
man? With a
I know,
voice
it's been
like
a
that,
while.
I knew
I've been
it.
grinding, been
Yeah,
grinding.
good, man.
So I'm trying to build a legacy, man. I've been, spending a lot of time with family offices and, the Gen 2s, 3s, 4s and things. And you learn that there's a lot, it's like a relay race in life, so we're handing to the next generation something, and we have the opportunity to, shape our whole family's legacy from, every point, from like our faith to our, principles to how we kind of do life and how we handle finance. And so I'm going after it, man. And this has been a vehicle that's already getting me there faster than
Love
anything
it.
else. So, yeah, man.
So
Legacy.
legacy is it? Can you add any kind of constraint around that legacy too? Like, legacy could be writing a book, man. It could be like installing a park bench,
So I can. So there, it's twofold. For me personally, I've always, it's been on my heart to start a Christian music festival, ministry
Cool.
music festival. So a lot of what I do, I tithe 10% of everything I make, so it drives me to make more, tithe more, do bigger things. But for the family legacy side, also would be the Bank of Jones family. And I don't
Yeah.
plan on giving any heirs a bunch of money. I plan on giving them access to borrowing money for specific things at discounted rates below prime, so that we can leverage, better financing terms for them
Cool,
in
man.
perpetuity.
Love it. That's very cool. Do you know Dylan Smith? Yeah, you haven't been on a call with him, but
I
he's in
don't think
the
so.
Christian space. His clients are church. His clients are companies that sell to churches. So he's aligned there. We've got some other folks too that are kind of like in that space that you might want to connect with. Great, man. Love it. I'm a little pragmatic with this one, maybe to the sense of being a little boring, but I learned a lesson for myself, which is I don't want to create unnecessary constraints. So one of the constraints I want is a certain amount of money a month. And the other one is a certain number of hours a week I work. Those are easy ones for me. And I can just say, like, I'm on track or I'm off track. Any other input? I know this is like a little softer. Maybe some of the guys are like struggling with this stuff.
Yeah,
Go ahead,
no,
Jay, and then Paul.
okay. Yeah, I want to really kind of steer the games industry back towards just making like just good fun experiences with the players in mind and not into service of like highly extractive monetization or like boring, like kind of designed by committee, stories or characters, and just kind of taking the industry back to its roots, back to what it was like, back in the 80s and 90s, even like up to like the late 2000s, when it was just really centering fun, and not bullshit. I do want to. And I'm thinking either a studio of my own or some kind of like either like a boutique publisher or maybe even like a small capital fund, for making those types of games
Seems to me the
and
capital fund
marketing
would make
them.
it all possible.
Yeah, I think so too.
If that's part of like kind of what you're chasing after here, some of your kind of what you want, I think that you'll start to see the VCs and the capitalized people, and you'll say like, "Hey, are you open to an idea of a fund?" If that's top of mind and something on a wall for you. Yeah, I like it. Cool, man. Great, Paul. What you got? You just want like water for everybody?
Basic human right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that goes without saying.
The trust between me and the client is a huge one. I'm sure we've all had clients that they're paying us, they hired us, but at the end of the day, we don't feel the trust there. And they're always kind of looking over the shoulder, or they're second guessing what we're doing. And on the other hand, I also have clients that I work with where there's complete trust there, going both ways, and gravitating toward those relationships. I also have the type of life I want, which is I don't want to be pinned down. I want freedom. So if there's something that's mandatory that gets in the way of me being able to be free to do some of those things I want to do and travel and whatever, like that's a flag for me that goes up that says maybe it's not the right client to work with. I've got certain trips I do every year and certain things that I like planning with my friends and family, and if they get in the way of that, not great for me.
Yeah, great man. Love it.
Simple man.
Yeah, awesome. It seems realistic that you'll find the satisfaction that you're looking for too.
You
Okay.
only need a few to say yes.
That's a good point. And there's a lot of potential clients out there. All right. The next thing is I wanted to stand on solid ground. And standing on solid ground is really just about following the CMOX process. If you follow the process, kind of unfuckwithable, why? Well, first thing you got to do is you got to work in an industry that you've done appropriate research in. I don't care if you've never worked in it before. You got to do the research. Good news is we can do the research now with AI tools to help us. It's great. The second thing is you have to have a clear agreement. We call it a contract, but it's an agreement. The agreement is how much I'm going to do, when I'm going to do it, and what I won't do. That's what our agreement is. I had a client text me yesterday morning, Sunday morning. I sent him a note back and I was like, I'll address this on Monday. Like, don't talk to me on Sunday, we have an agreement for that. And then we have to hold our clients to that agreement. Some of you have a difficulty holding people to agreements. So that's something we'll talk about here in a minute because that's conflict. The next thing is you got to get paid before work starts and you got to get paid every single month before the work starts. Always get paid first. Rich people get paid first. That's the rule. Then you have to be compensated to develop a full marketing strategy. Remember, like if you're new here and you're kind of lost, like what's this advisor engage thing? Remember this. Someone has to pay for you to sit down and understand their business and develop a strategy before you can do any other work. So it's a half-day consult, it's a 30-day strategy review, or it's the first month of engaged. You have to do that first. If you have an understanding of their business, you know the team members, you know budgets, you know all of that stuff, you can make incredible stuff happen. You don't have that, your confidence, phew, it's gonna go low. I've seen people like, for whatever reason, sign clients in the advisor capacity and never get paid to build a strategy. And then every time they have a call with a client, they're like reinventing what they're doing. Low confidence, the client will walk all over them. And the results are gonna suck too. All right, the next one is you gotta have a regular call with the leadership team. Maybe that's the owner, maybe that's the two co-founders, maybe that's the CFO, COO, CEO, whatever it is. You gotta have regular calls with these folks. You wanna be at that table. I don't care if you're coming in as like the fractional CMO that works alongside the full-time CMO because you're working on another project. It doesn't matter. You still have to have these calls. You have to have a direct line of communication. Next is you have to do quarterly planning. If you fail quarterly planning, you fall off of a strategy. Every quarter, you sit down with me, we develop a quarterly plan for the client. You go and deliver that plan. They finalize it with you. Then you're off to the races. And then all you got to do is stay on that quarterly plan, plus or minus. Things change in the market, I get, but generally speaking, the quarterly plan comes to fruition. And then to build your foundation of a solid ground to stand on, you don't want to be in a month-to-month relationship. The more successful you get, charge higher rates, but also extend your contract length. I don't want to work with anyone who isn't going to sign with me for like 2 years minimum. Mostly because I just don't want to deal with, I don't want to deal with like the restarting. We all know how inefficient and time consuming it is to load a new client in your brain. I mean, Mandy does this like a professional, but Mandy probably doesn't do a lot of other stuff during her client onboarding phase of life, right? You're
No,
muted again. Okay.
I do not. No, I do not. And I stagger my onboarding.
Yeah.
So having
It's
longer client term lengths is like the thing for you.
totally.
Yeah. And if one of you've sold a client, let's say $5,000 for engaged for 3 months, cool. Your next client, $6,000 a month, or $7,500 a month. Instead of 3 months, it's a 6 month minimum commitment. You just start moving that stuff up and building your confidence that way. The next is you got to be willing to push back on the client and their team and their vendors if they're breaking from the rocks, like they're doing stuff that you guys agreed that you guys wouldn't do, or if they're going to create an environment where you're not successful. I've been in environments where like they try to pull money from the marketing budget. They're like, sales are down. We should stop doing marketing. And then I have to say, that's a dumb idea, right? You have to be willing to push back and kind of go to the table and fight. You have to fight for what's best for the company, but above all, for the entrepreneur. That's where I think our alignment should always be, is with the entrepreneur, not with the company. Because if the company doesn't serve the entrepreneur, then the entrepreneur is not going to grow the company. So we want to support the entrepreneur. And then the entrepreneur takes us to the next business, if they exit that one. Also, conflict isn't a problem. Conflict is your opportunity to get realigned. Conflict happens when you have like diverging ideas or strategies or paths. You identify it and you say, I'm right. And the other person says, I'm right. That's conflict. And you have to just like go cross that chasm and get back on the same page. Sometimes you're right, sometimes they're right. It's less about a reflection of you doing poor work or your character or your intention, and more about just like finding what's best for the company. Then you got to be willing to leave relationships that don't serve you. Easier said than done, I think. A lot easier with this last point, which is having a steady pipeline so you can have the optionality. I mean, there's nothing quite like a client saying something on like a Friday and you're like, that sucked. And then Monday you address it. And then they say it again that next week. And you're like, all right, I'm just going to wind this one down. I just don't need this environment. Steady pipeline is huge. Yeah. Thanks, Paul. All right. So if you have these things and someone says to you, like, I don't like your marketing strategy, you can say, cool. What do you think I should have added? What do you think I'm missing? And you can pragmatically walk them through it. I was working with a client and we ran a webinar and it wasn't a screaming success. It was the first one. And as you know, it takes a lot to launch the first webinar. I had to build the technology, build the CRM from the ground up, the landing pages, identify the audience on Meta, the whole thing. Afterwards, the CEO was like, webinars don't work for us. Why would you tell us to do another webinar? I was like, great question. What do you think the answer is? She's like, well, I think there's another marketing thing we should do. It's like, okay. You think that we shouldn't talk to a large group of people? Is that like the modality you think is wrong? She's like, well, I think webinars don't work. And then I got to walk her back and say, like, no, this one didn't work for these reasons, but our cost per lead was this, and we did all these things. I was able to kind of bring her back to reality. I'm right that a webinar is a good way to sell to multiple people at once. She was right that the webinar didn't produce profit for us. So those two things both kind of coexisted. But if you have a functional marketing systems map and you like lay everything out, you've thought through all the possible marketing campaigns. It's not like someone's going to be like, have you heard of, this new thing that you've never heard of before? The answer is like, even if you hadn't heard of it, it's not a modality you hadn't considered. You considered social media, but maybe you didn't consider TikTok shops yet because you're doing the Instagram store thing. All right. I want to move on to conflict. This is where we're going to lean on Raph a little bit too. Conflict is a tricky one. And for a lot of us, we have just like a weird relationship with conflict. Conflict isn't inherently bad. But I think some of us make conflict mean something about our character or our worth or our abilities. And you likely have a process that you go through when a conflict arises. You say something in your head, and I just want to know what's true for you. And you don't have to share it here if you don't want. But we are all friends. So you might say, I'm not good enough. You might have some more like cutting language than that. Like, I'm a fucking loser. I'm an idiot. I'll never be good at this stuff. Some of us have something around getting in trouble. Like, it's just like this visceral reaction. I'm in trouble. Like, this person who is like my boss, my parent, my caretaker is gonna like be mad at me. I'm gonna disappoint them. And it goes further. It's not like I'm gonna get in trouble. It's I'm gonna get in trouble and I'll lose everything. I'm gonna get made fun of and I'm gonna be embarrassed. Some of us also posture a little differently. Say, like, if you disagree with me, you're the idiot. You're the one that's wrong. And I got to prove that I'm right because I can't trust you. And I can't fathom being wrong because that would mean I'm flawed and I'll get found out. You might say, I just need to like take this beating, like this abuse from this client because there's nothing better out there, which is so far from the truth. Or like you just dip. You're just like, I'm out. I quit. I quit. I'm gonna refund the client. Fuck them. I'm out. I'm leaving. I don't need this stuff. You have some kind of process around that. And it's like totally normal to have it. So these stress responses are normal and productive. They're not weird. Raf, can you talk about this for a second? I want to hear your insights.
Everybody gets stressed. From the time that we're little, we develop survival patterns in order to compensate for the stress. We would not use the survival patterns if they did not help us survive. So they're beneficial until they're not. And the goal that we have for all of this is never to like shame, blame, make wrong your past self and say, you did it wrong. Ugh, like I can't believe I was in this pattern and what an idiot I was, right? Like that doesn't help. You're kind of collapsing everything you're standing on, right? The solid ground that you're standing on includes all of your past success and everything that worked. It's like build that up. But recognize where you're at, you kind of go into default. Like the way that our brains work is we spend most of our energy trying to survive and trying to spend as little energy as possible surviving. It's just beneficial. It just makes sense. And what that means is that it's like that worked before. I will do it again, and I will also reduce energy by not even checking that I'm doing it again. This is like where we get into our default mode network in the brain. Some of these patterns, and there's like hours and hours of audiobooks that you could listen to if you really want to go into this, and I have recommendations if you want. But the core idea is like these are like big extrapolations of basic stress responses: fight, flight, freeze, fawn, flop. We could describe them in a lot of different ways and what these look like when they become habituated patterns, right? The difference between a response and a pattern. A response is something that you do in the moment because it makes sense in the moment, right? Sometimes it makes sense to fight. Sometimes there's a lion and, well, actually, should you fight in front of a lion? Maybe. You're probably not going to outrun the lion, so maybe fighting is the move, right? In front of a bear, maybe flopping and free falling on the ground and playing dead is the move. And sometimes running is the move, but sometimes it's not. And the thing that your body tells you to do that you're not maybe even thinking about the fact that you're doing it, maybe that's not the move. And so a lot of the work comes down to having a regulated nervous system that you invest in proactively before it's a problem. What does that mean? Being able to reduce your nervous system reactivity, being able to notice, I'm having a thought, I'm having a feeling, I'm doing a behavior. Does that serve me? Yes or no? Could it be better? Yes or no? What are my other options? Casey talks about optionality at some point. I don't know if we've talked about it yet. I think we did. Yeah, we talked about optionality. To me, this is how you want to know who's powerful, who can direct attention, and who's got the most optionality. If you're reactive, you can't direct attention. You think there's one way. If you don't have optionality, you don't have power. You think there's only one way. I want you to have multiple options, and I want you to have the presence of mind and body to be able to notice those multiple options. And I want you to have the internal creative power, not just to believe that there are options, but that you can create those options, that you can say, oh, instead of reacting to this, what if it were different? And let me show up as if it's different, as if it could be different. So that other people can respond to me in the way that I want. And that takes plenty of work. But I think that's the first piece of it. Interrupting a pattern of survival to create an opportunity for you to create the response that you want instead of
That's
default to the response that you may have inadvertently conditioned yourself for. I'll pause there.
I think that that's we're not suggesting that in this short workshop you're going to change your response, but we are suggesting that if you can cleave that space from stimulus to response and then just take that as a breath and then widen that over the course of the next few years as you experience that stimulus, you'll find yourself more in control. And it can still feel scary, but if you know that that's happening and you kind of have a word or a name for it, you can slow it down and then do a skillful thing instead of the thing that you typically do. Is that right, Raf?
Yeah. Exactly.
So I want you to write down your patterns under stress. What happens when you're with a client and something happens? What do you do? Example, the client says, Luana, you have been completely under delivering over the last month. I want a refund. Massive, right? Like that hits. Or maybe they say, these marketing campaigns are awful. They're just not working. Or I have no confidence in what you're doing. I'm just going to hire a sales rep. Where do you go for yourself? You don't have to share this stuff with anyone but yourself, but you have to write it down. Some of you are going to fight, flight, freeze, fawn, or flop. Some other words for it, you might just get small and collapse. You know, like woe is me kind of stuff, or you get big, or you just disappear. Defensiveness. The Gottman Institute has the four horsemen of like relationships, and defensiveness is one of them. It's powerful. Like defensiveness is an awful trait to work with. Like if someone is really defensive and you're working with them, it's a very difficult human trait to have on your team. Maybe you go that place. Carolyn?
What do you mean by fawn? I'm not too sure what you mean because it's got flight,
Yeah.
fight, fawn, flop.
May I?
Yes, please.
So, fawning is where you. It's like the only way that I can be okay is if I make you okay. So, it's like you might. Some people will call it like being like a yes person. Some people might. Stephen Kessler, a psychologist, Stephen Kessler calls the survival pattern around this merging, where it's like the idea of let me give you the thing that you want so that you're good. Let me praise you. Let me reduce your discomfort. So it's like somebody comes and says, Casey, your webinar sucked. It didn't get us the results that we want. I need you to do X, Y, and Z. Otherwise, this doesn't work. And Casey goes,
And
you're
I'm
totally
mad
right.
about it, right?
Huh?
And they say that, and they're like, and I'm mad about it.
Right. I'm mad about it. And then you go, you know, you're totally right. And I'm going to fix this and I'm going to do the things that you said.
Please
You're
don't
kind of
do that.
like fawning. You're like, yeah, no, you got it. You're right. I was wrong. Instead of saying, hey, I see where this didn't work, but I stand by what I did. And we're going to still find the way that we're going to get the thing that we need, the way that we need it. But you're not like abandoning yourself in favor of making them okay. Does that make sense?
Completely. Thank you. That was a good explanation.
Geraldina, what's up?
I was gonna just say something regarding, like, when you said earlier, you get on a call and they tell you, like, this campaign, I'm not working, I'm gonna hire someone else, right? So I think a big factor is, I mean, if you go into a call and you're gonna know how do your campaigns are performing. Like, so at least some of the time you will have at least think, oh, that might happen, right? I don't think that's something that surprises, like, completely, you know, maybe sometimes. I think most of the time you kind of know when things are not going well,
Sure.
right? So I think that a big component in not having, like, a reaction, and it's not taking you to where you want to go is having some time to kind of like prepare, right? So if it's an email, like, you don't respond right away. Like, you wait maybe an hour, maybe even 24 hours. I don't know what, depending on the situation, right? But I think, like, your stress response, the first response that you're going to give in the moment is probably not the right one, right? So ideally, you want to have some buffer time before you respond. And so I think that's possible even when it comes up in a call, because most of the time you kind of have a feeling of if the client is happy or not happy about what you're doing. Like, I don't think there's something like, oh, you're fired comes completely unexpected. Do you agree with me on
But it
that?
can though too, and like I want to be prepared. You're right. You're right. There is time that you can buy yourself time because of the modality that the message came to you in. But also, there's you know these things can come up. You know, like on a call that you didn't expect, or you've got a call in 5 minutes because the client just booked you in on a 5-minute call on a Friday. You're like, oh shit! Like where do you go during that? I
I
think
think
is.
that's when your skill comes up even more, because if you didn't have created, if you haven't worked on that skill beforehand, it's not gonna be fun to be on that call, right? I think you wanna develop that skill before you find yourself on that unexpected call. But I wanna hear from you, like, if that happens, how do you buy yourself some time?
I don't necessarily. I close the gap quickly.
All right.
If someone wants to talk to me, I don't say, let's talk tomorrow. I say, I'll call you in like 1 minute. Let me just step in the other room. I want to have the conversation right now. But then I want to check in with myself and create that space between what they say and then
Yeah.
like my reaction to it and then my
Respond.
yeah, but also like how I internalize it. Like I really want to be careful about that. It's easy to take other people's opinions about my work as being factual, you know, but like in that situation with that CEO, she didn't know what good marketing was. To her, good marketing was just profit. But she didn't understand precursor. She didn't understand technology. She didn't understand messaging. She didn't understand the percentage of people that stuck around to hear the offer. And then it was the offer that flopped and not necessarily the, you know, the audience or the cost per webinar attendee. So I have to collect myself and not take an introjection. So someone else's belief system that I then inherit into myself and believe that it's my own. I just want to kind of create a wall and then just be like scrutinize a little bit more
Yeah.
if I can. But I mean, we still have patterns. Some of you just put your head down and work. You're just like, all right, client's mad. Sorry, honey, I can't come downstairs for dinner. I'm going to work all night and I'm going to be the superhero that solves this problem. That's some of you. Some of you are just qu like quitters, which isn't a bad thing. You're just like, I'm out. Have a good life. So I hope you wrote something down on your pattern. So when conflict arises, most people just don't address it head on. Conflict is great. Conflict is useful. Conflict is like a really important part of relationships. Raf and I studied with a guy named Jason Gaddis from Relationship School. And Jason says that most relationships, like intimate relationships, don't really get past the conflict stage. Like there's a stage in maturation where it's like the honeymoon phase and everything. And then you reach like a true conflict. And maybe it's my religion versus your religion. And I'm not going to raise kids with you that don't go to the synagogue or the church, like that kind of conflict. Or it's like a conflict around home, like labor and the equity of it. Or it's around some, like there's some significant conflict that exists that's never resolved. And people operate above it and never get through it. You have to be the kind of person that identifies this type of conflict with your clients and you have to get through it. And it sucks. It can be really hard. All this stuff about your childhood and whatever comes up, but you have to just stick through it to hear the truth from them and their opinion. I think that you can find a way to get what you want and get them what they want. A lot of the times. A lot of the time those things are aligned. Some of the times that that's aligned is actually the best way for you to get what you want and me to get what I want is for me to leave. But I'm going to share that with you. And I'm not, it's not a judgment, it's just a fact. So conflict is important. I also think of the importance of calls. I wish she was here. Karen reached out in the lab on f Thursday, and she said that she has a call with a client, and that call was on Friday morning. And this guy wanted to work with her, and he like, you know, conveniently misremembered her fee, and pegged her lower on her fee. And Karen's a player, you know. I mean, she was the former CMO of Ancestry.com, and I coached her and it was like, there's 100 words you're going to say. And if you say them right, you're going to put yourself in a position for this guy to like pay you the rate that you want. And if you fail to say those 100-ish words correctly, you're never going to have it. And for the lifetime of the relationship, it's going to be not what you want. So how do we clarify precisely what you want? And she clarified it and she went in and she got $1,500 a month more than she told me she was going to take from the guy. So she pushed it higher than his offer, which is like, pretty excellent. Remember the value of these few words. It's not like just a call that you're having with someone when there's conflict. It's like, okay, this is great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I want to talk about this weekend when you were texting me. That doesn't work for me. And it actually takes me away from good work on Monday morning when I want to saddle up and really dive in. I want us to come up with a way for you to feel like I'm able to hear you, but I don't want you to text me on the weekends or after hours. Would you be comfortable just sending me an email? Or do you want to text a different phone number? I can give you my Google Voice number, you know, that I'll only check on Mondays. It's like that kind of stuff works, and it's not a problem for most clients. There's always like kind of the crazy abusive client that wants to squeeze every moment of labor out of you every day of the week. And those people just aren't for you long term. Okay, so I want you to think about how you want to react when there's conflict. Fill this in. How do I want to react when there's conflict? What kind of person do you want to be? What do you want to do? Like the higher self of you, how do you react? So instead of thinking I'm in trouble, I want to think that there's a way that we can find a solution that benefits both of us. That's how I want to react. How do you want to react? Rav, could you share any skillful ways to react to conflict?
So, recognizing that you don't always have the ability to kick the can down the road, I think that a pause or space is the most important thing. You might not be able to say, "Let's talk about this tomorrow," but you probably can say, "Can I have 30 seconds? Can I have 10 seconds?" Right? And interrupt whatever's going on for you. Right? The first thing is probably a deep breath. Right? My favorite thing, if I could only tell you one thing to do to help regulate your nervous system, it's HRV breathing. Heart rhythm variability is a measure of your like neurological health. And the way that you can influence that is four count in through the nose, eight count out through the mouth, small hole. And if you practice doing that all the time, then you increase your heart rate variability, and it's going to be much easier for you to get out of a like activated state and into a calm, present state where you can choose reactivity versus choice. Another thing that's super, super helpful around conflict resolution is perspective taking, or make yourself a defense attorney for the other person's success. Everything you're doing, you have a really, really good reason for doing it, and I probably made up a really big story about the reason that you're doing it. Does that serve you winning? How can I get out of my own head and get into what are your really good reasons for doing this, and how do I help you win? You'll fight for yourself. I hope you trust that. If you're also coming in with the perspective of you have a great reason for doing it, and maybe it's dysfunctional, and maybe there's a better way, but first you're just going in and advocating for their success and assuming that your stories, any judgments that you've made, are projections designed to protect you, that's going to serve you. Up until you start making concessions for people that don't have your best interests in mind, right? Don't abandon yourself for someone else, but remember that that projection piece is probably that's where I think most people fall down, right? As Casey was saying, I think you were saying something about this before, but this idea of we have a story about the reason we think this thing is happening. It's like get out of meaning, get out of story. If it
Sure.
helps you to swing the other direction so that you can be there, then do that. But talk about facts.
Photographable facts.
Right. This happened, right? How you feel about it, the meaning that you made about it. Like you can walk back from that, take a step back from that so that you can point to concrete things. I think another big thing is that there's probably more options than you think there are.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. But you said earlier, like when you're flooded, and you just like take that immediate reaction from talking to a client and you get defensive or whatever, like there is only one option in your mind. But if you can relax, you're right. There are a ton of options that are available.
So can you come up with what's one other option? What's another option? What's another option? And then just be able to sit without decision making quickly. I think so. If we wanted to go into a whole thing around repair and like what relational repair looks like in conflict resolution in a professional setting or a personal setting, we could totally do that. We don't have time, but we could totally do that. But I think one of the things that's really important is don't commit. You don't need to commit to anything immediately. You need to get options on the table and understand what's the right, like
That's right.
what actually works here. It's the same way if you've ever heard this like idea of like apologizing too quickly like degrades trust. Right. So if I, and I do this all the time, I notice myself doing this all the time with my partner, and I like do a thing and I'm like, ah, sorry about that. And I'm like, she like comes to me with like a thing. It's like, hey, this happened. And I try never to say sorry first. I try to say, what happened? Help me understand. And how'd that impact you? Got it. Here's my part of that. Here's what I want to do differently. I'm sorry for how I impacted you. Like the sorry comes like at the end. Now we have a lot of trust. It doesn't really matter. The sorry thing, she gets it. And we still have that conversation when I like do it impulsively. But it's the like real accountability comes from like what's happening, why did it happen, so that we cannot let it happen again. And then we commit to change behavior together. We actually make an informed agreement that we're really choosing, not we're doing it so that you'll be okay, not so that this conflict goes away. That's why most people apologize too fast. Let me make this conflict go away. Instead, try to understand what's really going on, figure out what the options are, and make an informed commitment around what's actually going to change in your behavior based on where that behavior came from. You know, Casey, when in Casey's example of somebody's text, it's like, hey, you probably wanted to know something was going on, or maybe it was because that was the fastest way that you had to communicate with me and you didn't want to forget. But I don't want to reply in that moment. And I don't want that disrupting my weekend. Let's find a new
I,
way.
and it's not villainous that a client texted me on Saturday or Sunday.
Right.
It's fine that they did it. But yeah, totally fine.
And
Like, there's no
Casey doesn't.
moral issue with that. It's not good or bad. It's just they text and they were working on a Sunday. I'm not going to answer it, and I want them to know that. And I'd like them to message me somewhere else. Easy peasy.
And you're protecting the confidence they have in your relationship by saying, let's find another way so you can do what you want and I can do what I want.
That's right. Yeah. Cool. All right. So write down how you want to react. The options are such a big one. I had a difficult conversation like a month ago with a client, and they wanted me to answer them immediately that evening. And I said, I just need a little bit of time. I said, don't draw this one out. And then the next day, they were really pushing on me. I need an answer by this time, or this like negative thing would happen. I replied back and I was like, I'm doing the best I can. You will hear from me tonight. Like, that's it. And I passed their timeline when they were going to do this threatening thing, and it's fine. Like, I did exactly what I said I would do. We ended as friends. Everything's fine, but like, that was a hard conversation. And pressure is the tactic of someone negotiating. Like, they're just like going to put on the pressure. Make a decision right now, Raph. Are you going to do it or not? If no, I'm going to pass it on to someone else and you'll never have this opportunity again. It's like, well, first of all, will I ever have the opportunity again? I might. I remember hearing like someone saying like, oh, that's a once in a lifetime trip. Like, is it? I don't know. I got a long lifetime ahead of me. I think I could maybe do this one again if I wanted to. All right. Next thing is playing the long game. If you want to get what you want, it's going to take you a while. Anything worth getting is probably going to take a little bit of time. Otherwise, you'd have it. Your goal is to have more good days than bad days. Your goal is to have more good years than bad years. Your goal is to have more right fit clients than wrong fit clients. I am so grateful. I could say to Raph, a client who had the dog, it was a terrible client that we worked together with. Really disliked the guy. I'm so grateful for it. And I'm also so grateful I have no clients that resemble him now anymore. That's really nice, right? So yeah, it was tough in the time, but the long arc of it, great. You want more marketing campaigns that work than don't work. And I'll tell you that, like, the more time I spend in an industry, the more likely the campaigns that I set out to get launched are going to be successful. Same with you. If I put you in three completely different industries and you had to run three campaigns, you're probably not going to do great. You'll do okay. But if you were just like in your space, like Brandy, if you were just working in like skincare, you could crush women's skincare products, right? And launching those. So spending time in the depth, in the niche, you're going to have that expertise that's going to build your confidence. All right. So along the way, you're going to have some bummers, seasons where you get it wrong, where you're surprised, where you feel behind because you were sick and in the hospital, and Opus 4.6 launched and you missed it. I'm talking about you, Kim Snell, but now you're back and
Oh,
you're crushing
yes.
it, right? Did that happen? Yeah. It's like a lot happened while you were hanging out in the hospital. But you're
Yes, I'm
back.
playing catch up on all the AI stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's going to happen. But each quarter, you grow in your taste discernment and experience. And those are the things, again, that AI is not going to take from us: taste, discernment, and experience. So I want you just to like declare your mantra for the long game that you're playing. How do you know? I'm so simple. I want a simple instruction set on my wall. I want a mantra that I look at. What's yours? I'll tell you mine: inevitable. If I keep working at it, it's inevitable that I'm going to have what I want. Inevitable. What's yours? What's your thing? I can do it. I'm growing every day. What's a mantra for you that's like meaningful?
Can I tell you mine?
Yeah.
It's enjoy the ride, meaning like the highs are higher because of the lows. It's
I like
all a
it.
ride. It's all for fun.
Right? That's good, Carrie.
Always like Zig Ziglar's success is a journey, not a destination.
Nice.
All roads lead home.
That's nice.
I do it a little differently because I have an anchor. So depending if I'm not confident, so I got this, and then I do like a kind of a fist thing. So it kind
Cool.
of anchors the body,
Love it.
which I have to do in about 1 hour.
Okay, cool.
Nemesis
Like a
call.
Tony Robbins move.
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I like it.
Almost.
Yeah, great. Great. The last thing here is I want you to put this all together and I want you to have this somewhere. I love little cards on my desk, you know, like little index cards, and I write stuff on them and I have them out. I also like a whiteboard. I have one just off the screen over here that I see, no one else sees. It's like pretty private for me, you know, but like what's on it? It's like how much money I want to make, how many hours a week I want to make, my mantra, like that kind of stuff, how I want to show up for my family. I really encourage you to build something like that. Then it's not for anyone else but you. Put it somewhere that you're going to see it. You know, your computer background, it's cool, but if you share your screen, I don't know. I like it somewhere visual. If you're the kind of person that has a sticky note on your laptop with your passwords on it, maybe you take that off and you put this on there instead. But you got to see this stuff. That's what's critical here. Don't make this just Netflix that you just watched with me for an hour, but make this something that you're going to like put into practice. And you know you're doing a better job when there's a stimulus that happens. You identify that you have a response that's trying to happen, and you're just like taking a breath and extending that to, you know, a longer and longer timeline over the course of your life, and you're able to inject better responses instead of just these kind of automatic responses. Ref, anything to close this with?
It's the work of a lifetime.
It is, right?
Start today.
Yeah. And if you're not a little embarrassed by what you said on a client call 6 months ago, you're probably not growing fast enough. That's where we got to be right now. All right. If you guys have questions about this stuff, let us know. We'd love to chat about this in the lab or on other calls. Great to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank
All
you.
right. See
Sessions.
y'all.
Thank you.